Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sawbones, a world tour of misguided medicine. I'm your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
I wouldn't change places with anyone tonight.
Okay, I see what you're
we'll
doing
We'll carve
here.
Pumpkin faces and watch the witch's flight.
Just skip ahead to the tambourine
Anything
part.
Anything can happen on Halloween. Your dog could turn into a...
Okay. All right, so welcome to Justin Sings the Hits.
I'll sing this whole song.
Your Halloween Hits podcast.
Anybody seen my tambourine?
There we go. That's
Might
what we were waiting
playing,
for.
Start begin the begin.
How great is Tim Curry?
That track is the best. There are like no good Halloween songs, just that one. And Monster Mash, I guess.
And everything from Mickey's Monster Musical.
Everything from Mickey's Monster Musical, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Werewolf Bar Mitzvah. That's the only Halloween songs that I like.
Happy Halloween, happy Justin.
Happy Halloween, Sydney. I don't know why we went into the NPR bit from SNL.
It's a delightful time of
Halloween
year.
Halloween is here.
The holiday season of Halloween. Spooky. The spooky time of the year is upon us. Everybody's excited with costumes, crafts.
People would say this show is already usually
tasty
pretty
treats.
Pretty scary, usually, Sawbones.
That's true. I think we were even listed as a horror podcast.
Yeah, by one publication.
Yeah, I don't think that's completely fair, but then I have a warped perspective on this, I think.
Yeah.
But I felt like in the spirit of the Halloween season, we should do something a little bit spooky, a little bit scary.
I love it.
Tell a ghost story, as it were.
Yeah.
Sort of.
I'm
it
ready.
Involves ghosts.
I got my chile mocha.
I will say the word ghost.
Okay. That's actually a trademark of my brother and me, but I think I can talk to them and just sort of get a temporary license to talk about ghosts.
Oh, yeah. You guys do a ghost thing, right?
Yeah. I just love the ghosts. Just do a ghost thing.
Do a ghost thing. It's there with your horse thing and your shark thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Now, I want to talk about cinematic neuroses. I know that doesn't sound like a ghost thing, but we'll get there.
I heard cinematic. I'm into that.
Right. That has to do with movies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So most of the time when we talk about severe psychological reactions, like somebody having, mainly what I'm referencing is post-traumatic stress disorder or PTSD, we're talking about real life events causing them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So somebody goes through some sort of they experience or witness or are confronted with an event that involves a threat of death, a threat of serious injury, actual death or serious injury, and a threat to their own personal self-integrity. And this causes a severe fear reaction. They feel helplessness, they feel horror, and then you get all the symptoms that result from that.
Right.
And so when we talk about that in medical terms, we're usually referencing, especially historically throughout different case reports and articles and how we defined this disorder, we're talking about real life events. But since the age of media, we have begun to accept the fact that maybe those kinds of symptoms could be caused by things we see but are not actually experiencing, so to speak.
Well, it makes perfect sense, right? Like it's the whole reason that we can engage with drama or comedy is that our brains don't necessarily parse, reality versus something that we see on a movie screen in completely different ways. It's still the same inputs and the same.
And but the question is that then could that go too far?
I don't know, Sydney. Could it?
I guess it could. I'm going to tell you about it.
Okay.
So when we're talking about cinematic neuroses, which is not really a term, neuroses, that we use anymore, this actually probably dates back to like a Freudian concept. When mm-hmm. when we talk about, I don't think Freud coined that term, but when he talked about neuroses and then in relation to cinema, what we're referencing is this Freudian concept that you have this struggle with the devil, with a love-hate relationship with the devil, which I'm not entirely certain how that works, but you have control over that. And if you feel that you are losing control over that, that you are helpless to it, then it makes you, it connects to relationships in your personal life that you no longer have control over. And now it will make you feel helpless and alone. And seeing things that relate to the devil that have to do with losing control can trigger this.
So if your relationship, just so I understand, if your relationship with the devil gets out of control, it can have an impact on your other relationships.
Yes. And you feel out of control of other relationships, especially if you're already in some sort of stressful relationship situation.
Okay.
So this is the basis of a lot of these cases that I'm going to talk about. Now, a lot of this, too, it tends to be more likely in susceptible individuals. So people who, like I said, are already under some degree of stress, but not necessarily. Some of these cases I'm going to talk about are in people who previously reported no psychological symptoms or problems.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But basically, the idea is that you see something in a film or a television show or hear something on the radio, and it makes you feel like you have lost control over events, and that you yourself, your own person as an entity, is now kind of up to the whims of whatever.
I get that from checking 538 a lot, so I definitely understand where you're coming from.
All movies can cause some disturbances in this, as you referenced, Justin. Like, mm-hmm. like you don't have to see something that severely impacts you to feel. I mean, obviously, like, movies make us cry.
Right.
Movies make us laugh, so they can affect the way that we think and feel, and maybe like change the way that you look at something. But what we're, and they can even cause like symptoms that are negative. So you can see a movie and have trouble sleeping or have like recurrent thoughts of that. I know that for me, there are certain movies that after I watched, I referenced a lot The Exorcism of Emily Rose, where afterwards it stuck with me
mm-hmm.
and it was kind of like in my head, the images for a while.
I had that with The Descent.
Yeah, but it's less severe than what we're talking about here.
Okay.
So let's start with kind of the precursor to this. And that would probably be War of the Worlds.
Right. I've heard this story. H.G. Wells did a broadcast of War of the Worlds and...
Well, Orson Welles did the broadcast.
Oh, yeah.
Of H.G. Wells, sure. War of the Worlds. There are too many Wells
involved. And a lot of people thought it was real, and they got super freaked out by it.
Now, that is the story... As it is told, right? That it caused this panic. So it was on October 30th, 1938. Orson Welles produced the piece, and there were actors involved. And it was about an alien invasion. If you're not familiar, War of the Worlds was about an alien invasion of Earth. And the way that he produced it, it was like a series of news bulletins that broke into other radio programming. And it detailed an alien invasion of a town, Grover's Mills, in New Jersey. Now, the problem and what caused the panic that Justin was referencing was that many listeners were actually listening to a different radio program at first that was way more popular. And so they didn't tune in immediately to hear the beginning that said, this is a dramatic piece that will mm-hmm. be presented of H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds, blah, blah, blah. They didn't catch all that. So they just tuned in to hear news bulletins that sounded like aliens were invading. The other thing is that a lot of people didn't necessarily catch that it was aliens who were invading.
Oh, okay.
They tuned into a news program that talked about invaders. And this is in 1938.
Oh, sure, right.
So this is at a time when a lot of people thought this may be referencing German invaders. This mm-hmm. may be the German army. So police actually were in the studio by the time the recording ended.
Wow.
There were many, many calls that came in afterwards. But when we think of this, a lot of people have this concept of this event that there was like panic in the streets, people screaming and running out of their homes. You know, that's actually greatly exaggerated.
It actually doesn't surprise me that much, especially with Orson Welles being involved, because he had a reputation as quite a showman who liked to play with reality and truth or fiction. I mean, he made a whole documentary about it called F is for Fake, which it plays with that exact idea.
Exactly. And that's, I think a lot of the, he even, I think, referenced like leaving the studio and seeing the streets flooded with people and all this stuff. And honestly, that really wasn't true. Because the program that ran at the same time was so much more popular than this radio programming, most people never heard this. Mm-hmm. Most people were confused for a minute and then figured it out and were more upset by it. Because at the end, he said, this has been a presentation. Like, if you tuned into the very end, you heard right. again that this was not real. So most people were more upset by it and annoyed because mm-hmm. they felt like they were trying to be tricked. There were some people who wrote in and said, like, you scared me, you upset my family, you know, this was not right. You should have greater standards. It was used to trigger a backlash against radio really? And immoral programming on radio and things that could disturb children and scare people. But it really didn't do that. Mm-hmm. So, but this was the first time where we see this idea that maybe you could hear something and it could affect people enough to, you know, change their behavior, create some sort of panic or, you know, mass hysteria, so to speak. The first case of this actually being documented is probably 1974 in response to The Exorcist.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
So after the movie The Exorcist came out, in the Journal of Nervous and Mental Disease, there were 4 case reports published of people who reported previously not being diagnosed or treated for any sort of psychological illnesses who developed what they called in the journal an acute traumatic neuroses from watching The Exorcist. Wow. So they actually came into hospitals, went to see doctors and said, I can't sleep. I'm terrified constantly. One man said he was convinced his daughter was possessed and he couldn't be around her anymore because he was so convinced that she was possessed by the devil. There were people who had obviously that's a delusion. Mm-hmm. The people believed things that were not true. Some people even experienced psychotic symptoms, you know, hallucinations.
There had to be other stuff going on, though. I just don't give credence to the fact that you watch The Exorcist once and you suddenly just, like, you go from 100% solid ground to hallucinations and what have you. Like, I've seen The Exorcist. Mm-hmm. It's pretty good. It's all right. I think The Descent is scarier, but, like, fine. The Exorcist is pretty scary. I have a hard time believing that. But, again, like, I guess you have to remind yourself with cinema. And I guess any new medium, but cinema is the one that I think is the most recent for us to reference. Like, our brains a lot of times have to evolve with the medium. Like, you hear stories of, like, them showing the footage of the train coming into the station and people, like, jumping out of the way in the theater.
Exactly.
And you have that with virtual reality now, too, actually. People our brains just aren't equipped right now to process it. And we have to expect that we'll get better about that, but...
It's funny because I think that you see that a lot just anecdotally for me, The Exorcist is a terrifying movie. And the first time I saw it, it horrified me. It deeply disturbed me. It took me a long time to be able to sleep with the light off at night after seeing The Exorcist. Today, if I watched it for the first time, I can't guarantee it would have that same effect over me. But that's because a lot of movies have done that and more since
right,
then.
Right,
so you're right. It is something that we adapt to. And I think that's why when we talk about like movies and TV shows kind of upping the ante, they have to take it further. This is why. Because we become accustomed to it. But people weren't accustomed to it when they saw The Exorcist. They found it very upsetting. There were a lot of like... reports from ERs like we had people come in who were very upset, but this was documented in a medical journal that there were at least 4 cases of people who were diagnosed with psychiatric problems after seeing The Exorcist. Now you're right, they actually draw on in these articles, they draw on the Freudian concept of we think these individuals were already in stressful life right. situations and that maybe this was kind of a last straw kind of thing. Sure. They saw The Exorcist, and that was just enough to push them over the proverbial edge. So sure, that's possible. But maybe you don't necessarily have to be already kind of in a stressful life situation. Maybe something could be scary enough that if you're younger, it would deeply disturb you. If you're just not old enough to comprehend it.
Like what?
Let's talk about Ghost Watch.
Okay.
Now, being from the United States, I was not familiar with Ghost Watch. Have you ever heard of this program?
No.
Okay. I imagine that some of our listeners who are from the UK may already know this story, may have heard of this before. So on Halloween in 1992, BBC One, which is like the serious one, they're like, they do the news. This is important to the story.
Okay.
BBC One took this concept of something that might, you know, terrify people. They took it a little further. There was a horror mockumentary that was written by Stephen Volk. And his original idea was that he wanted to do like this 6-part series leading up to Halloween, where he would do all these kinds of stories and it would all culminate in a live broadcast from a haunted house on Halloween. And it would, you know, be very popular. That all, after he pitched that, they were like, well, we don't think that's a great idea. We'll let you do one show. And you can say it's live, but it's not going to be live. You can record it ahead of time, but we'll put it out on Halloween as like this big special program. Okay. They did it at like 9:25. So it was just late enough. I guess it's after what they call the watershed hour. So it's late enough to be like nighttime programming. Don't we have a term for that when you can start cursing on TV?
Safe harbor.
Yeah.
Is that it's for us, it's after 10 from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m.
So this was 9:25. So this, I guess maybe 9 is when the cutoff is. So it was past the kids are watching TV, but still early enough that probably some kids are gonna watch it. It's a Halloween special. It was aired as part of Screen One, which was a drama series. So it was aired as part of what is clearly a fictional series of programming. It was directed by Leslie Manning. And the plot of it was that there were some BBC actual reporters, people who actually were reporters on BBC One, so that the people watching at home would recognize them and already know them, who were going to go to what was being called the most haunted house in Britain, in London, and they were going to report on the haunted activities in this house. The reporters involved, Sarah Green and Craig Charles were two who were going to the house to investigate. And then back at the studio were Mike Smith and Michael Parkinson. And they were going to be tossing back and forth and doing news reports from there, interviewing the children and the mother involved, interviewing neighbors, and then getting calls in the studio about the house to get background on it. These were all well-known public figures. And Green actually appeared on children's programming. On the BBC. So there were some parents who may have been more inclined to let their children watch because, oh, we know her. She does kids shows. So anyway, it all was, you know, kind of framed as here are people you know reporting on events that are happening.
Okay.
And they advertised the live broadcast somewhat ahead of time, even though it was actually, it wasn't live. They recorded it a couple weeks before it happened.
So what happened?
Well, Justin, I'm going to tell you what happened next right after we go to the billing department.
Let's go. The medicines that escalate macabre
for the mouth. Listen up, Midwestern Max Funsters. Do not miss out on the inaugural Chicago Podcast Festival, November 17th through 19th. Catch the hilarious ladies of Lady to Lady and the witty and incisive Aneke and James from Minority Corner. Plus, Bullseye with Jesse Thorne will feature interviews with some pretty heavy hitters, like Andre Royo and Dwayne Kennedy. Don't snooze, don't lose. Tickets are available right now. Visit MaximumFun.org and buy them.
So you were saying that they had been advertising it leading up to it. They were kind of pretending maybe sort of like it was a live broadcast, but it had been pre-taped.
Exactly.
So what happened?
So as viewers tuned in on Halloween, 9:25 on Halloween, 1992. What they saw were Green and Charles at the house of the Early family, Pam and her daughter Suzanne and Kim, who had been reporting strange noises going on in their house. Initially, the daughters heard these strange noises and asked their mom, what is that sound? What is it? And she said, oh, it's probably just the pipes. Now, as a result of this, the ghost became named Pipes, which is a really scary name for a ghost.
That is a scary name.
On a side note. So they interviewed the family. They interviewed neighbors, and they also had a fake expert along with them, Dr. Lynn Pasco, who was actually played by Jillian Bevan. And then, as I said, in the studio, they had Smith and Parkinson taking calls from viewers. And the calls from the viewers were important, too, because all of this is scripted.
Right.
And as you are seeing the disturbances that are happening in the house, you're getting background information from callers who are saying, I know who lived there before. Have you heard the story of what happened to them? And that kind of, so you're building the ghost story that right. way. So the ghost named Pipes, we learn, is this entity that is ancient. It is like this malevolent spirit that has been around for a very long time. And it's very angry and it's very scary. Now, it has taken many forms. And through the callers and the neighbors, we hear about people who have lived in the house before. Most recently, there was a Raymond Tunstall who may have been a child predator, someone scary already, who was already disturbed and then was possessed by the ghost Pipes, or the spirit, the entity, and had hung himself under the stairs. There was an area under the stairs, and then had not been found and had maybe been eaten by cats. Ugh. So we get this horrifying story. They talk about the spirit that inhabited him was probably this older spirit that they called Mother Seddons, who was a baby farmer from the 19th century. Do you know what that is?
No.
Have you heard of baby farming?
No.
Now, I had to look this up. So baby farming was a horrible practice. It was supposed to
babies be in little tiny overalls, just getting, they could only do like shallots and turnips because they're so little, right?
That's, tell you what, if you don't want to hear about what baby farming is, that's what it is. And just skip ahead about 30 seconds or a minute or so. If you really want to hear what it is, baby farming.
How do I skip ahead, Sydney?
It was supposed to be what would become like later the idea of fostering or adoption, but that's not what it was back in the 19th century. Women who, for whatever reason, would have a child and then couldn't raise it or didn't want to, or it wasn't proper, maybe it was out of wedlock, whatever reason, they didn't want the child, would give it to someone else who was a baby farmer who would care for the child for a lump sum of money. And you could either do that for a while and then give them back to the parents, maybe when they're older, easier to take care of, or you would keep them forever, or you would give them to someone else who wanted a child, whatever. The basic idea is they were responsible for the baby. And like I said, this should have been a precursor to fostering and adoption, and certainly in some cases it became that. But many of these people who were baby farmers were poor and would get this big lump sum of money to take care of the child indefinitely. Well, it was better if the child
didn't live very long. Yeah, okay, I'm with you.
So famously, there was the murderer, Amelia Dyer, who was responsible for the deaths of many, 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 many children. And there were also other evil people who took advantage of this practice. So that's a really scary ghost. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's a very scary ghost.
That's a very scary ghost. Whoever the ghost is, throughout the broadcast, we see more and more evidence. We hear noises at first, and then we start to see like apparitions of the ghost throughout. We get more gruesome details of the history. The presence of the ghost is becoming more obvious, and the newscasters are becoming scared. Everybody is getting upset. Like what started off as this like fun Halloween, like, oh, we'll go to a haunted house broadcast, is becoming something very intense and terrifying. At this point, the doctor and the reporters realize that the entity, the ghost, is becoming stronger, and they're seeing the ghost and they're seeing more of its activity, probably because of the television audience viewing at home. They say that it's sort of like a national seance, as they are all watching and believing in and participating in these events. They are making the ghost stronger.
Weird.
And that now maybe they can't stop it. it's too late. They've channeled this energy of the as an entire nation. They've channeled their energy into this ghost, and the ghost has become too powerful. And as the show culminates, the ghost actually drags the reporter Sarah Green under the stairs into that area where the person had died.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably, she is now killed.
Right.
We do not see her again. And then it escapes through the cameras into the BBC studio.
Ah, great.
Where it takes control of the studio and possesses the host, Parkinson. And it ends with a shot of him being possessed by Pipes the ghost. And then presumably the ghost escaping out to wreak havoc throughout London.
So what was the reaction like to this?
Okay, so the reaction was not great. There were lots of complaints. A lot of people were very upset because really there was the when they aired it, there was the credits ahead of time, and it was clearly part of this drama series, but there really was no other indication throughout that it was fake.
Mm-hmm.
Because they wanted it to be scary, and that was their defense. We wanted it to be scary. We didn't want to tell people it was fake, so we didn't tell people it was fake right at the end. The studio was flooded with calls. The BBC received tons of criticism. All of the tabloids the next day were published saying, you know, BBC horrifies the nation, terrifies everyone. Everyone's scared. Everybody, there's a general uproar. To try to dampen that, Green appeared on a children's show the following Monday to say, hey, look, I'm still alive. It's mm-hmm. fine. I didn't, don't worry, kids. Yeah. I didn't die. That was all fake. But the damage was already done. There were so many complaints to the BBC that they had to apologize. The producers had to apologize for it. And they put a 10-year ban
Whoa.
On the program. Now, why are we talking about this in a medical sense? Well, after the show, there were 35 complaints to the Broadcasting Standards Commission that not only was this inappropriate and scary and we don't like that our kids saw this, but it had severe psychological effects on members of their family, that this was more than just a scary show. Your show damaged me, my husband, my mom, my right. child, whatever, mostly children. There was one case that caught national attention and got some headlines where a family blamed the suicide of their 18-year-old son on the program.
Oh, my gosh.
He killed himself 5 days after the show aired. And while they couldn't directly link it to the show, the parents felt strongly that maybe that was what had pushed him over the edge.
Jeez.
And so there was a headline that ran, Ghost Watch Killed My Son.
Yikes.
You know, so this, of course, got a lot of attention from the Broadcasting Standards Commission, along with all of these other complaints. Basically, they answered this with the 10-year ban and the apology.
Right.
No other real action was taken because you couldn't prove.
It's a really tricky legal precedent to draw, right? Like mm-hmm. And I don't know anything about UK law. I don't really know anything about American law. There, I said it. But like, it seems like a really sticky wicket to say like your show made me mentally ill, you know what I mean? Like cause mental illness with me. Like that seems like a really dangerous precedent.
Exactly. Well, and that's what they said. They could not prove, there was no way to find out, was it the show that caused the problem? And can a show do that?
Mm-hmm.
Which, like I've referenced, we have War of the Worlds who upset some people, and we have The Exorcist where there were some scattered case reports, but we don't really have an established, at this point, like in the medical sense, we don't have an established precedent for like, what is cinematic neuroses? How intense can it, can you get PTSD from watching a movie, from watching TV? Can you really?
Yeah.
Can it be severe enough that you become suicidal? I mean, this is still all up in the air at this point. And I think today even we wouldn't know 100% if we could answer that question. What did follow this though, after these kind of like news reports and anecdotal cases, in 1994, the British Medical Journal, so we're talking big time, a real deal journal, the British Medical Journal published two case reports about diagnosed post-traumatic stress disorder in two 10-year-old boys as a result of watching Ghost Watch.
Wow.
They said that they had 12-month history of sleep difficulties, nightmares, fear of the dark and couldn't sleep alone, fear of ghosts, intrusive thoughts, panic attacks, that it had all onset suddenly while they were watching and immediately after they watched Ghost Watch. They couldn't go upstairs because it reminded them of the house in the program. They had had to stay over at their aunt's house because it reminded them less. And that neither of them had any symptoms before, and now they do after.
I have a hard time believing like I said, a single event like that could bring on mental illness. But I do see how, I think if they had any anxiety leading up to that, like that can be, for people who live with anxiety, like that can be triggers like that are a big deal, because you can be keeping the ship afloat for a while, and like something like that can be the triggering factor that sort of brings it down on you.
Which I actually think is what, you know, there in response to this, a lot of letters were written and published in the British Medical Journal saying, you know, there were similar cases. There were four other children that they identified specifically in reaction to Ghost Watch who had these same symptoms between the ages of 11 and 14. And then they even mentioned a case of one 8-year-old boy who was very upset after watching Casualty, which is, I guess, a British medical drama.
Oh, like, wow.
Kind of soap opera medical drama thing. But what they said in all these cases, and then they also had some scattered reports of symptoms in the elderly as well. Okay. But what they said in these cases is that exactly what you're alluding to, some of the children were reported as being sort of anxious, not being diagnosed with anxiety, but ahead of time, their parents said, well, they've always been kind of anxious children. Mm-hmm. And that the symptoms resolved so quickly afterwards. And they did require some therapy, but it was such a quick resolution and without kind of the chronicity of PTSD mm-hmm. that many people said, you know what, I think these are more like acute anxiety reactions. Okay. As opposed to post-traumatic stress disorder, which is a whole other entity. So maybe these were children who already had anxiety, and this was a trigger for them. That makes more sense.
Hmm.
Either way, these reports are continually referenced. I think what's interesting is, as I was reading about this, about the British Medical Journal article, they are referenced today when we have the bigger conversation about violence in TV and movies and video games.
Having an impact.
You hear these case reports referenced as, look at what this one TV show, this one time did to these children. How are you saying that, you know, something that they play on a daily basis? Anyway, so this is added to kind of that conversation. What effect does this media have, especially on kids? Just as a side note, Ghostwatch is referenced on Doctor Who. I forgot about that in the episode Army of Ghosts in 2006. And there was like a linked up website that the BBC created between, a tie-in website between Ghostwatch and Doctor Who.
What Army of Ghosts? That was...
There was a show on TV that was called Ghostwatch. So many times on TV. There was a documentary that covers all this and everything. It's called Ghostwatch Behind the Curtain that came out in 2013, if you're interested in the history of this. And I don't know, this is one of those things where you read and then you have to wonder, living here in West Virginia in the U.S., is this really true? I don't know.
Yeah.
But they say that starting in 2010, there is something called the National Seance, where they encouraged fans of Ghostwatch to—they didn't show it on TV. It's that they, at 9:25, encouraged everyone to start their own private recording, however they have access to it, YouTube or whatever, at home on Halloween at 9:25 in the evening, and just know that the entire country is watching it, even though it's not really being broadcast. I don't know if people really do that. It sounds really cool. I kind of want to.
That sounds awesome.
Except the time difference. I don't even know what time we would be watching it. But
yeah, I need to see it. Can you get on DVD or whatever? Probably over there.
Oh, I'm sure we could. I'm sure we could find it. I'm sure we could access it.
I found it on YouTube. It's a weird, distorted version to keep the bots at bay. Because they've got scanners that look for copyrighted content. So people distort it. You know how sometimes we watch Canadian Dragon's Den that looks weird? Yeah. that's fascinating, Sydney, and very spooky.
So be careful what you watch this Halloween season.
Don't just pop in Hocus Pocus all higgledy piggledy. You gotta make sure that you're in the right headspace for it.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking of, was Hocus Pocus.
Folks, that's gonna do it for us this week. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks to the Maximum Fun Network for having us as a part of their extended family. There's a lot of great podcast there at MaximumFun.org for you to enjoy. I want to say a quick congratulations to beloved Sawbones listeners, Teresa McElroy and her husband Travis, on the birth of their baby girl this
Yay.
Week.
Yay! Congratulations! Welcome, BB.
Welcome, thanks to the taxpayers for letting us use their song "Medicines" as the intro and outro of our program, and I believe that's going to do it for us. So until next week, my name's Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.
All right. Yeah. MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.